Hello and welcome to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. 4 years ago, Russia's special military operation started in Ukraine. So-called peace talks are going nowhere. There is reason to believe Trump would like to see this conflict come to an end. The Kiev regime and the Europeans demand the war continue. Clearly, this conflict will be decided on the battlefield. Crosstalking Ukraine, I'm joined by my guest, James Jatris in Virginia. He's a former U.S. diplomat and a former advisor to U.S. Senate Republican leadership. In the U.K., we have Anthony Weber. He is an independent political commentator. And in Serbia, we cross to Drago Bosnic. He is a geopolitical and military analyst. All right, gentlemen, Crosstalk rules in effect. That means you can jump anytime you want, and I always appreciate it. All right, let's kick this off with Jim. You know, it's 4 years now, I think much longer than any of us had anticipated when the conflict started, the special military operation. But here we are. In the background for the last, I guess, half year or so, there are so-called peace talks. They're going nowhere. I don't have any faith in them, to be honest with you, because I don't think NATO is a good faith actor. I don't think Trump actually understands the complexity of the situation. And there's not a unified understanding of what security is all about. And that from the Russian side, it's all about security. Other than that, things can be negotiated. So 4 years in, Jim, what are your thoughts?
Well, you know, I have to assume that people in Moscow are finally waking up and smelling the kvass here, that there is not going to be a negotiated settlement. I mean, early on, people wanted to hope that Trump was going to be a different sort of critter than Biden or Obama or anybody else. But remember, he's the one who built Ukraine up into a quasi-NATO force during his first term in office. So now he's got his New York flim-flam artists over there, Kushner and Witkoff, to talk about big business deals and lifting sanctions and things like that. You know, you still hear people talking about the spirit of Anchorage. I mean, when do people wake up and understand that there's no deal to be made with the United States that the United States will actually honor, Trump or no Trump? So maybe, you know, they send Dmitry Oth over to humor these guys, to keep the lines of communication over. But at some point, you have to realize, and I'm sure a lot of people in Moscow don't want to face this fact, they're just going to have to do what they need to do militarily. That's the only way this war is going to end, because the longer this war goes on, the more the prospect for escalation is, and the quicker we're going to get to a real deadly confrontation between NATO and Russia with no holds barred. And I don't think anybody wants to see that, because, you know, potentially then we're all dead. So I think it's really imperative that people in Moscow just face the fact that these guys are not dealing in good faith. And it's not just with them, it's with the Iranians or the Chinese or anybody else, and that they have to create realities on the ground. The question is, what does that look like at the end of the day?
That's very good. And I mean, Anthony, this is an extension of what Jim said there. You know, 4 years in, we see the consequences, or the boomerang, as people say, that Europe is having to have to pay. The divisions within Europe, I'm looking at Hungary and Slovakia, even the differences between the major Western European powers, Germany, France, and Italy, that has had its impact as well. And it's one of the interesting things after 4 years, because of the negative consequences that Europe has had to experience, and because of the cold shoulder that Trump has demonstrated to the Europeans, particularly at Davos here, the Europeans are scrambling. And that doesn't bode well because of what just Jim said here. That gives people the idea to escalate, because they don't have the wherewithal with the current toolbox they have to achieve what they want, which is a strategic defeat of Russia. That's what this has always been about. It's not about Ukraine. Anthony.
Yes, it's definitely about a war of attrition to do whatever damage they can do to Russia. I think in the European countries, including the United Kingdom, it's time that the government looked at what was in their own interest, because they've been acting since the start of this conflict against their own interests, because they've been economically damaged, financially damaged, and socially and otherwise damaged as well And certainly in the case of the UK, this policy on the Ukraine of not pursuing neutrality, which is what should have been pursued, and not pursuing peacemaking, has been really damaging to the interests of the British people. But there's never been any referendum on the issue, and governments involved with these policies have been acting without the consent of the British people. And I think one of the things which really underlines the situation is the former Chief Defence Staff Field Marshal Richards, who said it wasn't in the UK's interest, to be involved in the conflict. And there was no way that Ukraine could win the conflict without the direct help of NATO, which obviously is not going to happen. So all these people who are saying that, Ukraine can win, Russia will lose, etc., they're talking absolute nonsense. And one of the problems we have with the UK in particular, and it's echoed in other European countries, is there's no fair and free debate on the subject of the conflict. It's only given the Zelensky Ukraine point of view, and the globalist people who run the EU, and not anyone else's interest, not the interest of the public.
Anthony, but see, that's one of the interesting things about this conflict. I want to go to Drago right now. It's not that Ukraine is of utmost importance to these elites, because I don't believe it. Because if Ukraine was so important, they would send their own troops, okay? But they're not, okay? But the derivative effect is, well, there's a reason for more censorship now, and now it's time to start banning political parties. Oh, the Romanian election, invalidate that. See, this works to the elites here, because what it does is that the EU is a failure. NATO is nothing without the United States. So let's create a new imperative, you know, the prime directive, if you can say, it's Russia, Russia, Russia. And that is their unifying idea, Russophobia and the Russian security threat. That works just dandy for these people. Oh, by the way, it doesn't help Ukraine, Drago.
Well, I mean, I think Ukraine is, I wouldn't call it supremely important to these people, but we have to also see it from the context of the Epstein files, because the Epstein files have essentially confirmed that these people were pretty much kidnapping kids from all over the planet, and Ukraine was a major source of kids for these people. And the fact that the so-called International Criminal Court was involved in all this, the fact that they are accusing Putin of kidnapping kids when actually he saved 20,000 kids from being taken there, and they were supposed to be pretty much done, you know, whatever the hell we were reading about in the Epstein files. So when the Russians asked, like, can you prove that these kids are going to be returned to their parents? Well, they couldn't. They could only justify 339 kids out of 20,000, you know, where they could guarantee that they would be returned to their parents. The rest would have ended up, on islands or God knows where. Tortured and killed in the most brutal ways we can imagine. And I think this is very important to say, because just 10 years ago, if somebody said, you know, that things are being done to kids on islands, they would be called crazy, they would be called conspiracy theorists and so on. The problem is, people who are doing this to kids, how can you engage in diplomacy with them? Because if they think this is, you know, it's a normal thing to do this to do this to kids, how can we, like, you know, make peace, or how can we talk about very important things like geopolitics? The scary thing is, these people control the Western nuclear arsenals. Like, these are the people who control the United States. These are people who control France, who control the United Kingdom and NATO in general. And I mean, it's very important for the people of these countries to realize these people are the enemies to all of us. It doesn't matter if you're from Russia, from the UK, from France, from America, from Serbia, it doesn't matter where you live. These are the enemies of all of us. And these people create wars in order to extract children, among other things, and then use them for whatever the hell they want, for the most insane things you can imagine. And I think this needs to be taken into account.
Well, I mean, that brings up a broader question, Jim, is that even though we have these series of negotiations, and we can actually throw in Iran if you want to, there's no good faith there. I mean, seven months ago, the Trump administration was involved in negotiations with Iran, and then the U.S. bombed Iran. Israel attacked as well. I mean, it's very eerie here. And the Russians, the Chinese, and everybody else is watching. Is that on the one side of your mouth you talk about a deal, which it means you compromise, we don't. And then, you know, kinetic action happens. And this is the same case when it comes to Ukraine. There was a deal on the table in Istanbul, and you walked away from it. Jim, go ahead. Let me go to Jim.
Absolutely right. And look, there are still a lot of people who look at Istanbul and go, woo, 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 we could have had peace then. No, we couldn't have, because all the assurances the West that was giving at that document at the time would not have been honored anyway. It's the same old scam we've seen over and over again. And it just seems to me that at some point, you know, we keep hearing about how restrained Russia has been from those who are seeing through the propaganda, how restrained Russia has been, how cautious they've been not to escalate the conflict. But the thing is, on the other side, that's read as weakness. Every time the Russians tried to make a deal, or the Iranians or anybody else, the other side has said, aha, see, they're afraid of us. We can escalate, weakness. We can escalate, and they won't respond. And the other side, in fact, is very muted in its response because they don't want to escalate. They want to be the adult in the room and not have this thing spin out of control, which simply encourages the most violent, most reckless tendencies from the Western side, who can approach this in a very, very cynical way. And, you know, and unfortunately, the way this war is being fought is a war of attrition. You know, if you could go back to 1914 or before the World War II or World War I, you know, can you imagine how excited Western leaders would be if they could see, hey, wait a minute, maybe we can get a lot of Russians and Ukrainians to kill each other. So they could sit back with ghoulish delight, knowing that whether they're wearing Russian uniforms or Ukrainian uniforms, they're Orthodox Rus killing each other. And that's unfortunately the way Moscow has chosen to fight this war. They have not targeted the leadership in Kiev, not the SBU, not the presidential administration, because they want to be restrained.
But, you know, in a kind of bizarre way, I think that Zelensky is actually a Russian asset, okay, by his clownish behavior. Okay, I mean, someone far more rational might be more appealing and compelling, but you have this clown going from stage to stage, making a fool out of himself, and in connection with that, he makes everybody else look very, very foolish. These people that embrace Zelensky, they will rue the day. They'll say, like with Yanukovych, oh, I didn't know him. Oh, I had nothing to do with him. That's going to happen, okay? Gentlemen, I'm going to jump in here. We'll go to a short break, and after that short break, we'll continue our discussion on Ukraine. Stay with RT. Welcome back to Crosstalk, where all things are considered. I'm Peter Lavelle. To remind you, we're discussing Ukraine. Okay, let's go back to Anthony. One of the perils that the Europeans, including the UK, face is that they've been loaning Ukraine so much money that the Europeans and the UK, that they don't have. They go into debt, they print it, but it's going to come due one day. They need Zelensky to stay there because he's their marker in Ukraine. See, this has turned into a huge fallacy, okay, that the more they invest, the more tragic and fragile the situation is. So they invest even more to keep it going. That's going to come home one day, and it's going to come crashing down. And these loan guarantees and all bridge financing is all going to go back to the taxpayer. Go ahead, Anthony.
Yes, it is tragic. And of course, some European countries are waking up to the disastrous nature of it all. We've got the example of Hungary and Slovakia. I think we're going to have some more facts in the EU. But in respect of the United Kingdom, we've got a different policy. group of people in charge. We even had the defense secretary saying that one of his major achievements would be to have British troops in Ukraine. So we've got people who are pitching on the side of lunacy, not realizing the consequences of their actions. We have to go back to right at the beginning of this conflict, when after a few months, then Prime Minister Boris Johnson completely scuppered the peace deal, which was on the table. And you could argue that he and one or two others are responsible for the lives lost of hundreds of thousands of Ukrainians and Russians, and basically the breaking up of Ukrainian society, because over a quarter of the population left or passed away, and the economy is in tatters. They're not an independent country, that so much of it has been sold off to hedge funds and others. And this is not the line which is sold in the media in the United Kingdom. In the United Kingdom, they're celebrating the fact that Russia has only, they say, only gained 20% of Ukraine, not realizing or ignoring the fact that it's never been Russia's policy to take over the whole of Ukraine. But it is getting to the point where, in order to safeguard their security, Russia is going to have to seriously look at doing that, because certain Western countries appear want to keep Ukraine going, even if there's a government in exile, causing problems with terrorism in Ukraine, and so on. So we've got major problems. I can see when this finally comes to light, because we had the COVID era in the United Kingdom, and most of the politicians who are involved in that have basically lost their jobs and had to make excuses. And I see the day when those who've been involved with Ukraine policy in the United Kingdom, they're going to be hanging their heads in shame. They're going to be looking for excuses and so on. But what is really missing is the opportunity to stand up for British interests, because there's been so much damage to the United Kingdom economy.
Well, I mean, but there's kind of a double whammy there, Drago, because, you know, first of all, we have this, like I said, this principle attempting to unite Europe and through NATO, the UK as well. But you have the Trump administration that is essentially trying to colonize Europe, a recolonization of Europe. And so you have this tension right here. And at the end of the day, unless there's like a Stalinist 10-year plan, I don't see Europe turning into any kind of military security giant on the world stage. As a matter of fact, I see Europe just kind of evaporating away, okay, into being just irrelevant, okay, and deservingly so. They pursued this policy here. They've made their bed. Now they have to sleep in it. So I mean, it seems to me that with, again, focusing all on Russia, but if the United States says, and it will eventually, leaves Europe, then the Europeans will have no choice but to make peace with Russia. Oh, no, that's too rational. I'm sorry, that's too, because these people are ideologically possessed. They won't do what's in their own best interest. Drago.
The problem with the Brussels is that it's committing ideological and literal suicide. So, we can't really expect from them to act rationally on a geopolitical level. They have adopted and are refusing to let go of this extremist neoliberal policy that has pretty much wiped out the European identity. And they keep moving in all these, third world migrants who are never going to be integrated into European societies, and who are essentially being used as a slave labor for the rest of the continent. And the problem is, at some point, you're going to have more slaves than the citizens, so to speak, if we're going to think in Roman terms. So essentially, we know what happened to Rome.
But Drago, on that point, on that important point, it seems to me they will use this imported labor and entice them or force them to become soldiers to fight their wars because their own people won't do it. So you get all these people from war-torn Middle East and Africa, and you say, look, we'll give you citizenship if you go fight in Ukraine. Some of them will do it.
Yeah, some of them will do it, but we've had this before. Like you had, when the Roman Empire was falling apart, you had Germanic tribes fighting other Germanic tribes to protect the Roman Empire. And we know how that ended up being. And in the end, this is exactly what's going to happen to the European Union if they continue to do this. They've also, Brussels has also opted to, let's say, jumpstart its economy by investing a lot of money into the military-industrial complex. That's not going to work. People don't need tanks. People don't need missiles. People need, stuff to, make a living. They need actual economies. They need actual production economies in order to, restart their economies across the EU. And this is not happening. They're trying to, once again, Europe is remilitarizing, and once again, it's going to smash itself on the Russian wall. We've seen this happen for 800 years. It has never worked. And this was, I just want to remind people, this was before Russia had the largest thermonuclear arsenal on the planet. It doesn't make sense. It's only going to end up, with Europe in ruins for God knows which time. And, the only thing I can do is, I can call upon Europeans to sit for a moment, think about it, and make a decision that's not going to lead them to that position, and that's going to give them a chance to restore their countries, to restore their cultures, and to restore their safety in at the end of the day.
Jim, we're in February of 2026. The conflict, the special military operation started in February 2022. Will we, four of us, be having the same conversation in 2027, February?
I certainly hope not. My fear is that the way things are going, especially with war looming against Iran, that we are moving much closer to a global conflict that we may not be talking about anybody, and there may not be anything to talk about by that time if things go terribly wrong. Look, Pete Hegseth said, I guess almost a year ago, that what Washington wants to do is slough this burden of Ukraine off on the Europeans. We'll fight the war to the very last Ukrainian man on the ground, and we'll fight the war economically down to the very last euro we can squeeze out of the Europeans. And of course, these lickspittle satellites that we have, like Starmer and Macron and Merz, who will just destroy their own countries in support of this agenda against Russia. This is, a lot of people say, well, but the Americans are more rational. No, this is good cop, bad cop. This is a division of labor. We want these idiots to do what they're doing to their own countries so we can go off and fight a war against Iran, get ready for a war against China, and so forth. This could turn out very, very badly. And that's one reason I do hope that at this point, the Russians just decide they have to finish this war fairly expeditiously and quickly, strategically, not this slow grind that could take years and years and years, while the global situation moves more and more toward a general conflict that will not be contained.
Anthony, the MI6 is quite notorious. It's always been quite notorious, and it's actually quite talented in generating mischief around the world. And there are reports coming, surfacing, unconfirmed, I want to say, that more machinations coming or originating with MI6. Obviously, the CIA knows about it, but more long-range strikes into Russia emanating from Ukraine. At one point, the Russians are going to say enough, and they will retaliate, and then we will have, this is only my opinion, Article 5 tested. We don't want to go there, but that's where we're going.
Yeah, so obviously MI6 is exercising a policy which has no approval from the British people, and it's the government which is promoting all of this. Yes, it's not the right way to go. I agree with what was said earlier that it's getting to the point now where the war has to be finished swiftly. We've had in the UK, we've had about 60 to 80,000 Ukrainian troops trained at the expense of our own troops. We've had helicopters and jets given to Ukraine, again at the expense of our own reserve forces. Things are starting to collapse because respective governments in Europe are not looking after the interests of their own countries. They're putting the vested interests at work in Ukraine above those of their own country. So I think in a year's time, we won't be having the same discussion. I think the conflict will be finally over for a lot of reasons, some of which have already been mentioned, but also because Ukraine simply have run out of resolve and of manpower. And we all know that there's just a few strategic positions left, which are strongholds. And once they've fallen, there's nothing really left to protect the rest of the Ukraine.
Well, I mean, what it's really about, I'm not going to wind up the program here, is that because of these European leaders that are ideologically possessed, it blinds them to physical reality. And this is what's really dangerous. And if you're blinded by your ideology, you're willing to do almost anything to challenge reality. That is the scariest place we can possibly be, gentlemen. And on that very depressing note, I want to thank my guests in Virginia, UK, and in Serbia. And of course, I want to thank our viewers for watching us here at RT. See you next time. Remember, Crosstalk rules.